the future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
It is Friday, everybody. Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Yes, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to vaccinated shit poster himself, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. That one's got some staying power, Sean, I think. Yeah, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel. Hello, everybody on YouTube. And I'm sorry if you got to see me having my little coughing fit there for a moment right before we go online. There you go. If you're over at our YouTube channel, if you're watching it live or if you're watching the kind of the replay later on, don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like this stream, and hit the bell that you'll know so you know every time we go live. On this week's show, guilty, guilty, guilty. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty on all three counts in the murder of George Floyd. Now attention turns back to the work of fundamentally transforming policing in America. And the three former Minneapolis police officers who were involved in George Floyd's arrest and who stood by as Derek Chauvin killed Floyd will be facing their own day of reckoning in court in the coming months. As if to underscore that convicting Derek Chauvin would not change the rot at the core of American policing, police shot and killed 20-year-old Dante Wright just 10 miles from where Derek Chauvin's trial was being held. An Axios reported this week that the Senate Democratic-Republican staffers see the Chauvin verdict as, quote, taking off the pressure, unquote, to pass meaningful police reform. A quote from their story stated, quote, senior Democratic and Republican aides who would never let their bosses say so on the record privately told Axios the convictions have lessened pressure for change. And if to underscore that point, what the hell is Nancy Pelosi doing this week? Right? Does she, after the Derek Chauvin trial, she comes out and makes a statement that Derek Floyd died for justice? And he, whatever, you know, thank George Floyd? Are you kidding me? Is she actually trying to hurt Democrats and prove to everyone that she and others in the party are completely out of touch? Apparently, I don't know how else to explain it. I mean, that's the charitable reason or review of it. Crazy. And India set new global record for the most number of COVID cases in a day, more than 330,000. Until now, the United States was the only nation to see that number of cases in a day. Hospitals in Delhi, and this is like, if you've been following this case at all, if you haven't been following this case at all, you should. It's absolutely devastating. Hospitals in Delhi and other large cities in India are running out of oxygen. Indian journalist Reena Ayub, told Democracy Now!'s Amy Goodman, quote, it's an apocalyptic situation in India right now, unquote. With a population four times as large as the United States, the devastation from the virus could prove catastrophic and lead to the spread of new virus strains. The explosion of COVID cases in India has further exposed inequity in vaccine distribution globally. Even though India is one of the largest producers of and suppliers of vaccines in the world, corporate patent protections have prioritized getting vaccines to nations who can pay top dollar, not to those who need it most. And guess what? Yep, we can thank Bill Gates for that, as outlined in Anne Newman's recent article in The Baffler, Who Owns Vaccines? It's really freaking unbelievable. Bill Gates is a bad man. He's a bad man. Yesterday, on Earth Day, Biden made a commitment to cut U.S. carbon emissions in half by 2030. And while that commitment is one of the boldest we've ever seen from an American president, energy experts told the New York Times that such a move would, quote, require dramatic overhaul of American society, unquote, and fundamental changes in America's energy system. It remains to be seen if the Biden administration truly has the political will to do what is necessary to meet his own commitments. And it should be noted that climate scientists and activists had pointed out that even Biden's bold goals are not enough to stave off some of the worst effects of climate change. Pretty crazy. Yes, Priorities USA. Remember Priorities USA? Yeah, that super PAC that supported Hillary Clinton back in 2016. They released a report last week that was very critical of Democrats' ad spending. Republicans outspent Democrats on TV and digital advertising for House and Senate campaigns 8 to 12 months before the 2020 election, even though Democrats outspent Republicans by the time the election kind of came up. So they spent a ton of money run up to the election. But here's the kicker. 75% of the money Democrats spend on TV advertising for congressional races missed their target audience. Yep, it was just about the billing, everybody. It was just about the billing. And D.C. statehood, baby. That's right. The House passed a D.C. statehood bill yesterday, and the bill moves on to the Senate, right? Yeah, good. You know, let's say Republicans, not happy, right across the board. And of course, you got the kind of cast of characters for the Democratic Party who are going to cause problems too as well. But nonetheless, it is going to the Senate. And it will be one more test of how wedded Democrats are to the filibuster. And today, man, it was one heck of a week in Pennsylvania, let me tell you this. And Seth Grove, you can hear Seth Grove's name a few times today. Seth Grove and the House Republicans from the State Government Committee released their findings from their election integrity hearings. Republicans are eyeing up voter IDs for in-person voting and those voting by mail, limiting drop boxes to one per county, having signature tests and third-party witness signatures for mail-in ballots, and a purging of the voter rolls. And that's just getting started, right? Stephen Caruso from the Pennsylvania Capital Star published in an amazing interview with House State Government Chair Seth Grove. During that interview, Caruso asked Grove how he could be a good faith actor in negotiating voting reforms when he's associated with ALEC, you know, the American Legislative Exchange Council, that billionaire-backed Koch brothers-funded place, right? Okay, so how can you be a good faith actor? And then he put his names on letters seeking to overturn Pennsylvania's election results and had a meeting with Kris Kobach during the election integrity hearings. Grove's response says, well, we'll see. Huh? We'll see? We'll see how you be a good actor? Oh, we'll see. That's your answer? Apparently. And election truthers, conspiracy theorists, and insurrectionists inspired by the McPillow CEO, Mike Liddell, returned to the Capitol this week demanding that Pennsylvania General Assembly pass sleep legislation. Pass legislation to conduct a complete audit of the 2020 election. Yep, there you go. And the event was such a hit that independent journalist and documentarian Zach Roberts traveled to Harrisburg for it. Welcome, Zach. Zach, I miss you, man. I miss you. And Chris Dush went full-blown cold warrior in the middle of the Senate Appropriations hearing. Dush, I gotta keep on saying his name, Dush, used COVID conspiracies and Nazi analogies when asking acting Department of Health Secretary Allison Beam if the Wolf administration, just sit down for this one, okay? Asking if the Wolf administration intentionally sent COVID patients to nursing homes and turned those nursing homes into death camps. Yes, and during the video he said, were there discussions with the department about how much money could be saved by putting people in those congregate settings and decimating the population and socialist governments that could be seen as an effective tool to reducing those costs to the state? While Dush was spouting off these insanely offensive conspiracies, the Republican Appropriations Chair was trying to interrupt Dush and stop him from speaking. It's unbelievable. And when asked, did you see this too? When I was like, well, where did that come? Well, I was forced to ask because somebody asked me the question to ask you. Yeah. No, you didn't have to ask that, Dush. And in an op-ed this week, Tara Mirth and Susan Freicht, for the Women's Law Project, warned that maternal mortality is skyrocketing in Pennsylvania, while PA Republicans continue to pursue anti-abortion legislation that will only worsen the crisis. HB 1977 is a near total abortion ban. SB 21 pretends to protect people with disabilities as a justification for restricting abortion rights, and HB 1890 would mandate a death certificate be issued for every abortion and would threaten medical providers who did not obtain a death certificate. Yes, just more fun in the freaking carnivalesque insanity that is Pennsylvania. And the Chronicle of Higher Education ran a big, if rather superficial, story on Pashi Chancellor Greenstein's plans to fundamentally redesign the 14 state-owned university system. While much of the article misses the mark, it has helped place Pashi in the national spotlight right where Greenstein wants it, I suspect. And it's coming Monday. We'll have APSCuff President Jamie Martin on the show. On Monday, to talk about Greenstein's planned mergers and redesign. And despite Greenstein's repeated public statements that faculty are very much supportive of the mergers, APSCuff decided to conduct its own survey of the faculty that are going to be affected, right? And out of, like, I don't know, 1,100 faculty, more than, like, almost 1,900-plus responded. And guess what it found? Well, fewer than 8% of faculty were supportive of the mergers, and only 7% believed the process had been transparent. So I guess it's kind of a low threshold on Greenstein's point, basically what you call support. Anyways. And today's last call, NASA's Mars helicopter Ingenuity made not one, but two flights on the Red Planet this week. The historic first flight on Monday saw the helicopter take off, hover about 10 feet in the air for about 30 seconds, and descend back to the ground. And then on Thursday, just yesterday, the flight lasted almost a minute. The helicopter hovered about 16 feet, moved sideways about 7 feet before returning to the ground. They're testing all sorts of capabilities from here. I'm just like, whatever. I'm just floored by this. Meanwhile, on the ground, NASA's Perseverance rover turned a bit of Martian air into breathable oxygen, thanks to an instrument called MOXIE. The little toaster-sized instrument is designed to separate oxygen atoms from carbon dioxide molecules. The test, and this was only just a test of this little thing, produced enough oxygen to give a single astronaut about 10 minutes of breathable air. Just wild. And earlier this morning, the SpaceX Crew 2 Dragon capsule launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida upon a Falcon 9 rocket. The international crew consists of two astronauts from the U.S., one from Japan and one from Russia. Crew 2 should arrive at the International Space Station early tomorrow morning. And yes, I did get up to watch the launch at 10 to 6 a.m. Yep, that was me. And SpaceX beat out Blue Origin and defense contractor Dynetics, to win... they beat them out to win the right to build the spacecraft for NASA's Artemis mission to the moon. Pretty amazing. And I got myself some human robot beer this week, everybody. And not to mention a hat, right? Got the hat right here. I'll put it on for last call, right? There you go. I said I was going to, and I did. So we'll have some news on that. And we've got some, obviously give you the updates from Free Will Brewing coming this week. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org or tune in to the Dish Network, DirecTV through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you subscribe to Rick's Daily Show on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you haven't already, you must, absolutely must, check out the newly launched Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast. Yes, you probably heard, I hope, that you've been listening, so that their latest episode that was out was with the one, the only, State Senator Katie Muth. Great episode. Get out there and check it out. The women behind this podcast really just rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried.
Spooky, they also right? have Allison Beam, Acting Secretary of Department of Health, on as their next guest.
Yeah, nice.
I'm sure we can get a really interesting breakdown of the committee hearing with Dosh.
Oh man, fantastic. Make sure you're going to follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter. Fantastic. And we've got quite a lineup coming up on Out the Coop Live. I'm just going to tell you the next two. This coming Monday, as I mentioned above, April 26th at 7 p.m., we'll be talking to Dr. Jamie Martin. She is the president of ABSCuff, the Association of Pennsylvania State University Faculties. We'll be talking about Pashi Chancellor Greenstein's plans for what he calls system redesign, which includes merging six universities into two, firing scores of faculty and staff, and destabilizing students' current and future academic plans. And then on Monday, May 3rd, I welcome Melissa Troutman and Joshua Boaz Probanik, directors of the new Rights of Nature documentary, Invisible Hand. Invisible Hand focuses on the global movement for the rights of nature, starting with Grant Township, PA, right here in PA, which became the first community in the United States that attempted to defend an ecosystem in court using rights of nature to stop fracking waste injection well from being built in its watershed. It's a couple of great shows coming up. We've got a series of other ones kind of lined up coming forward, just a matter of finding the dates. I tell you, this is a problem I like to have when I've got more people that want to get on quickly than I have time in order to do. So that is exactly where I want to be. We're also going to have another semi-regular segment that I'm going to be announcing fairly shortly. Look for that in probably the second week of May. But we'll tell you more about that as we get closer. So I want to remind everyone that, you want to help out what we got here, right? Best thing that you can do is that become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. You can help expand the shows that we're seeing and help kind of support what we do. But before I put a plug on myself, I can't believe I didn't mention right off the top. For all you gamers out there, please do check out the Game Inn for all your gaming needs. They're a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. Their family is like, you know, it's one of my son's best friend's family who owns the place. Fantastic. Check them out on Twitter at the Game Inn with two N's. Look them up on their Facebook page. Need something hard to get. You need kind of old school, new school, and everything in between. Check out the Game Inn. You can shoot them an email with any questions at thegameinpa@gmail.com or check them out online at thegameinwith2ns.com. And yes, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. We got rid of Trump, and now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Whoo, Sean, it has been quite a week, man. Oh,
sorry, I was muted. No, definitely. Yeah, I don't know where to begin. I mean, I guess we could start off by saying that I really enjoy the fact that like Harrisburg has an infinite amount of like golden turds that you can mine on a weekly basis, because it's the gift that just never stops giving.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That is pretty clear. And that will be 100% clear today when I think, you know, maybe April 23rd becomes like, Dush Day from now on or something like this. You know, it's like, let's return to Dush Day 2020. We'll do that like every year. We'll go back and look at what Dush was doing the week before. He's someone I'm going to have to start pulling some sound from, because, you know, it looks like he might be the next crazy.
Yeah. There's no shortage of crazy here in Harrisburg. I should say, I'm looking forward to podcasting without any interruptions, you know.
And why might that be, Sean?
Because my computer came in this week. Yay. Got my Mac. My MacBook came in. Definitely looking forward to using it. I've been whizzing around on it, picking up pretty easily. I don't see the jump being that big, but I am waiting on my monitor to come in, and then my full like workspace redesign will be over with.
What will you do with all your time then?
Just play around on my computer.
Oh, I thought you might be working or something. Then. No, good. And I hope all people can see this too as well, because I'm looking at it. I know I'm messing around with the screen right as we speak at the moment. I hope you can kind of see that Sean's video is like so much better. And I think that we're going to have a much better luck with the internet connection, because I know for the past couple of weeks it's been a little tricky. But Sean,
I actually don't know. So I will say, I don't know if Allison's coming on. Shanna just messaged me. I thought I heard in one of my group chats that she was, but I guess we'll see.
Oh, yeah.
Might have been a different podcast or a different chat. I got mixed up. So.
Sorry about that. Christopher just basically said, no, actually, Chris, it's actually, it's not a sun, it's not sunburn, if you can believe it. It's a little bit of a windburn and a little issue adjusting some of the settings on my camera. So I look like I got a little sunburn. No. And then Chris also wanted to kind of jump in by saying that Barry Weiss is going to be joining us all, because she's coming out with a new podcast. How about that? So all the more reason to sign up for the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast, to just make sure that Barry Weiss is kept as far away from the airways as possible.
Yes. Also, Sister of the Nights, I'm actually going back and forth with Shanna right now. They have a really awesome bracket going on, you know, a tournament.
They do, actually. I filled it out yesterday.
Who will start the America First Caucus in the Pennsylvania House and Senate? I definitely filled out mine. There are a couple of them are no-brainers, you know, with Mastriano. I picked Martina White over, I think, Benninghoff or someone. But yeah, so you know, they are promoting the crazy in Harrisburg. But yeah, I mean, it feels great having my computer. It feels great to being able to podcast without interruptions and not worrying about my connection on my end zonking out. I ended up getting a MacBook with like 16 gigs of RAM in it. So I think I'll be pretty good for the time being.
I hope so, man. I hope so. It looks great. It looks great. So I'm very thrilled. Yeah. But let's get into it. Let's talk. I mean, obviously the biggest news like nationally this week, arguably is the guilty verdicts in the Derek Chauvin case. I mean, it's you know, it was one of those kind of things, I think, that going into it is like, okay, this has got to be, right? This has got to be the case that the guy goes down for murder. Because, I mean, if you know, we talked about this off air a little bit last week, but my feeling was if he was acquitted on any charge, man, all bets are off. I mean, because it's like if you cannot... If like killing someone in broad daylight by kneeling on his neck for more than 9 minutes, almost 10 minutes, right, while somebody is filming you and you don't give a shit about it, and that doesn't get you murdered, then I don't know what else does, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, and the fact that like it got to the point where we didn't know if he would get convicted or not is a huge problem. I mean, I felt relieved after the verdict came in. You know, it feels like another wrong from 2020 was righted with this. Even though like George Floyd's not coming back, but like it feels like a reversal from like this past year that we've been stuck in with the pandemic, now the vaccines, and with Biden winning. Like this was, you know, one last thing that like there needed to be accountability, like some part of it. And I mean, it felt good watching him get frog walked out of the courtroom, you know, afterwards.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, like, yeah. I mean, we're, I guess we could talk about some of the reactions in a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good. And I, you know, what also marks this as fundamentally different from I think some previous moments was that there wasn't the. People tried, and this is kind of what you're getting at here. People really tried to kind of like call this justice. Right, justice for George Floyd. And you know, I'm telling you, the movements are strong enough now where people were very quick to just kind of get rid of that narrative and say no, that is accountability, right?
I mean, Derek Chauvin's actions. Out.
What's that?
I used the word justice on my Instagram account. I had a few people reach out to me. So no, I mean, like, it does matter, like the diction and the words that are used for this.
Well, yeah, because basically what I mean, look, I mean, by calling it, like a lot of people came out and the first thing was talking about justice and using it just kind of like in a kind of very colloquial way. But then you started seeing, you know, people like we talked about, like Brian Williams, we saw kind of even some Democrats talk about his justice as wanting to kind of like steer us away from the movement to, you know, kind of say defund the police, fundamentally transform police departments around the country. And basically seeing as that, okay, we got a bad apple, so everything works. And
racism is over in America.
Right, exactly. And almost like we've turned a corner, right? I mean, and you know, and again, in many cases that we saw some of that, even Biden, even what Biden's reaction was, and even Kamala Harris, right? You could see them kind of trying to feel where the winds were blowing. They didn't go all in and like justice has been done, American justice, blah blah blah. They're saying so much work needs to be done still and things like this. But more importantly, the people on the street, right, were kind of coming out and basically no. Like this, all this says is like the fact that we are celebrating that somebody who committed murder in broad daylight on film, on camera, could be put in jail. We're celebrating that. That shows you how far we've got to go. Right. I mean, that's just insane.
And also, I mean, I feel like it shows that the reforms that Obama pushed with, you know, like body cams being the panacea. You know, we've seen this with the body cams did prevent Dante Wright from getting shot and killed. You know, like,
right.
Like the body cam, like cell phone cameras didn't stop George Floyd or Eric Garner from being killed on the streets. You know, like just because people are recording the cops or the cops are being recorded through body cams, it's not going to stop them from committing the crimes they have, and it's not going to stop the systemic racism that is in our policing across the country. I mean, you know, Dante Wright was killed for having a warrant for a summary offense. You know, like, that is just, and it's ridiculous. You know, I had an argument with someone, or kind of like back and forth with a friend of mine on Twitter, about local police offices having radar machines, you know, like for speeding and stuff like that, because this is an issue that's been brought up for decades now in Pennsylvania and has just never went through the legislature and passed. And, you know, I've now the argument, no, cops shouldn't be having, like, you know, we should, most of these interactions happen because of racially profiled traffic stops.
Right.
So if you give cops, you know, the means to hitting people with speed guns, like, who are they going to pull over, especially here in Harrisburg, when you have the Capitol Police Department, you know, pretty much like racially profiling everyone that they pull over as black. And when they don't even live in the city, they don't have anything to do with the city. All they're doing is just going from state building to state building, and they over-police the neighborhood as if it's like their jurisdiction.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, we have a lot of changes to be made, and it's just like stuff seeing it here in Harrisburg and all, like, this is not the end. And, you know, like, the reactions coming from some of the Democrats were fucking abhorrent.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, let me, before we get to those reactions, the one thing is that, you know, what was the fact that you saw, you know, Dante Wright kind of get killed, you know, during this trial. I mean, I don't know how much more you underscore, like, how bad this is. Not only is he like another 20-year-old that was killed, and let's remember, it's like, we also saw the footage that was released from, you know, when the police that killed that 13-year-old, the 13-year-old kid in Chicago, the footage of that just came out during this too as well, right? And then was it yesterday? We saw
the day of the trial, or the day of the verdict, you have the woman, the young woman with the knife that was shot in Columbus.
Makila, what's her name?
Knight, last name, I think. Makila, I'm not
Knight.
Sure.
Makia Knight, but Makia Bryant, I'm sorry. And she was 16 years old, right? And one of the things that's been interesting about the way that people are talking about this now, right, is that, because what's the script? The normal script in this situation is saying, oh, but she had a knife. So, like, what we're being asked as viewers, right, we're being asked as kind of listeners of the audience, when people say that, oh, she had a knife, we're being asked to fill in a script that we've been taught, was that, therefore, she deserved to be shot, or she brought the shooting on herself, or the killing was justified, right? And we've seen, like, I've seen unprecedented kind of pushback against that particular narrative. The idea is like, no. Even if she did have a knife, she didn't deserve to die. Right? Using that in that situation, she did not deserve to die. She should have been tackled. She should have been, I mean, whatever it might be. Right? Worst case scenario, maybe use a taser. Right? But to kill her and shoot her? Right? So that's the kind of pushback that we're beginning to see, thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement. Right?
And how many white mass shooters have we seen get taken in armed with no repercussion or recourse? Or you have Rittenhouse, who was able to walk past police lines after shooting three people with his AR-15.
Exactly.
And able to go home that night.
That's just, it's insane. So, I mean, there you go. And once you get those points of comparison and you see the kind of quick pushback, you've had some Democrats have had to really kind of backpedal. And I have to say, probably the worst of it all had to be Nancy Pelosi this week coming out with a reaction to the trial. I mean, do you have a worse reaction? I mean, seriously, can you come up with a worse one?
No, I don't.
No, I mean, look, obviously the Fox News crew and the right wing media, they're going to do what
I
they're
do think
do.
Trey Gowdy had a really good reaction. I saw Trey Gowdy's reaction, just saying, you know, like, people still, I mean, it was still like, it was kind of bad, but it was like better than Nancy Pelosi's. Like, score is better than Nancy Pelosi. He's just like, I'm a former prosecutor and the system worked. And, like, people should be glad that we still have institutions in this country that work and that we have faith in. You know, and we're able to have, like, 12 people come together and come to this decision. And the right decision. I mean, Trey fucking Gowdy, of all people, had it.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm not going to say it was a good reaction, but it was a better one than Pelosi. When I still have not watched the video of Pelosi. I refuse to like put the video on and watch it. I've read the quotes. Like, he sacrificed his life.
Yeah, here it is. Let me just read what she said, right? For anybody who did not see this, right? Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice. Just let that sink in. Thank you, George Floyd, for being killed. Right? Sacrifice your life for justice. For being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out to your mom, I can't breathe. Because of you, thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous with justice. And now we have to make sure justice prevails in the sentencing. But you know, that's its own procedure. I mean, yeah, exactly. Your reaction is the only reaction you get. It is so freaking cringe.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know how, you know, she apologized afterwards. I'm sorry. You're the leader of the House and you've got, there's a verdict that's going to come and one of two things is going to happen, right? You have to be prepared for each of those options. And the fact is that you come out and say, thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, that's what you prepared.
And let's get be real here. Like, this is coming right when Axios is publishing their story saying, like, Senate Democratic aides are now saying their bosses feel relieved that they don't have to do anything because one killer cop was put away. Like, that's the bare fucking minimum. Like,
yeah, let's unpack that a little bit because this is really important. Right. The fact that people, you know, again, these are staffers talking off the record.
This is like Axios. So I really don't have, I mean, Axios kind of like publishes this stuff from time to time. It's sort of like Politico with like the Tiger beat on the Potomac type thing. But like, it's mind boggling. Like,
right. So, like, and just to be clear, so everybody's 100% crystal clear about what's being said here is they're saying that there were some Democratic legislators, right, who were concerned because there was all this pressure to do police reform, right? And it was going to put them in a bad situation because now they're going to have to do it. The cops don't like it, so it's going to make them uncomfortable. And, you know, they're worried about what the police are going to say, and they're worried about, you know, how that's going to affect them. And so now that this conviction that Derek Chauvin was convicted on, you know, publicly and on film on a live feed murdering somebody, that somehow that's going to take the pressure off. So they won't have to legislate in any meaningful way to get police reform. That's what's being said here.
As Dave Latour said, racism is over in America.
Jesus Christ, that fucker.
I mean, like, that's pretty much it. As Dave Latour said, racism is over. The verdict is in. Like,
well, which, I mean, it's remarkable. This is remarkable stuff. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's like, why is that remarkable? So let me just say, it's like, again, if you're politically aware and you're thinking about this stuff, it shouldn't come as a surprise, right?
I mean, we can also guess which senators these are. I mean, like, right. Mark Warner, Kyrsten Sinema, Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
Like, there's three, probably Chris Coons.
Mark Warner, like, by the way, is like the right wing Democrat sleeper cell. That's what I think about Mark Warner.
That's what I think about Kyrsten Sinema at this point. Like Mark Kelly, you know, like, I mean, you have people who are like, thank God we still have the filibuster in place, so we actually don't do stuff for our constituents.
It's crazy. Well, one thing you'll be happy to know, Sean, is that Shanna just said that she saw a bunch of Latour school board signs in Camp Hill today. So there you go. There you go. Oh my gosh. But so, I mean, so, okay. So why, so let's say, let's, this should not be surprising, right? This should, you know, we should be clear-eyed about this stuff. And let's just go back to you know, what I think the role of progressives are, right? I mean, let's be clear, is that this is not like, let's support Democrats for being Democrats, right? We've been saying on this show for as long as we've been on this show, right, is that Democrats get elected, then that gives us leverage. We have to push them, right? This is not a team sport thing, right? This is about saying, look, if you have Democrats, need to be pushed to do the right thing. And this is evidence of that. So there is no taking our foot off the gas, right? It's about pushing even further at this point. I mean, that's what we've got to, be able to take away from it, because you got those, you know, you've got, you know, people, you got Kristen Sinema, you got Mark Warner, everyone you just mentioned, if they're sitting there and they're kind of feeling a little bit of relief, we need to make that as short-lived as possible, right? By putting the pressure back on them. And that's true at the national level, and that is true at the state level and the local level. Right. And probably even more important, the local level, when it comes to police reform, right, precisely because of the way the police form, police departments are funded and the way that they're monitored. So there you go. That's a nice smirk you got going on your face, Sean.
No, I'm just laughing at a couple of things. Crancy was messaging me and praising me for being clean shaven. But no, man. I'm also like laughing at the Latour for school boards.
It's just like, you know, God. But this is where we're at, right? I mean, this is if it should buck up anybody, like, at least you got to know, if you live here in Pennsylvania, you are at the center of the political universe right now, right? Because like crazy has come home, it's built nests, right? And it's hatching all over the place. And our job is, one, to contain it, and then to kind of, you know, get rid of it. So we all got work to do. It's great.
I don't even know where we go from here.
Well, let's just do an abrupt shift. How about that?
I mean, I like the Priorities USA thing, but we can hold.
Well,
let's go.
Let's go at the end. I don't want to go into this too extensively, right? Precisely just because there's some really deep wells to go down in this one. But just want to say, what is happening right now in India?
With Modi, but like, I'm on vacation, I really can't help you out. And so everyone for themselves.
Right. So let's see the pattern, right? Modi got a right wing strongman, right? They surpassed, like, you know, they
Brazil.
Took over the lead from Brazil, right? Which, again, another right wing strongman who's kind of leading stuff down there. The case of India, however, is most disturbing, in part because, you know, like 80% of American vaccines, the vaccines that we get, are manufactured in India now, right? So they have the facilities in India. And, you know, I was listening to the Majority Report this week, right?
I mean, it's like a great, like, example of, like, neoliberalization, globalization, and the neoliberal, like, world order that we live in, like what's happening in India. And it's been like that. I mean, what's the one woman, the farmer, that, I mean, like, we can go
the
back
Donna
to
Shiva?
Yeah, Donna Shiva. Like, I mean, just going back like decades, you could just tell how fucked up India's like policies are, just because of like globalization and how we treat. Yeah, like.
It's, but here's the thing about this, though, right? Is that some of that has been turned, right, by some of these movements? Again, Vandana Shiva, and again, there's been this right wing backlash, this Hindu nationalism, and things like this that's going on in India. But the other thing is that India did also pass these laws, right, that basically said, you know, we don't have to abide by your patent laws, right? Is that basically they basically took, you know, the needs.
Well, I'm talking in the context of like broader context of globalization, farming, but it's just like, it's always been a really bad case of like how globalization affects developing or underdeveloped like country.
Yes, totally. But here's the thing. So you've got the manufacturer, but, you know, we also kind of see in India, you've got some of the, you know, again, you've got a kind of high tech sector, right? You've got like the pharmaceutical industry in India is absolutely kind of enormous. And a lot of those are kind of Indian based firms. They're not these global transnationals, right? But some of them are, right? What was fascinating about listening to Ann Newman on the Majority Report this week, and then reading her article, right? You know, it's kind of like, check it out in the Baffler, Who Owns Vaccines, is that she was able to point out that the movement, right, the World Health Organization, right, and normally how you do stuff with these vaccines was all set to go ahead, right, and basically say, how do we go about having a global approach to this stuff? Now, usually what that entails, it means of kind of, you basically, you obviously, you allow corporations to, you know, recoup their money, but you basically open up the patent on it, right? So you allow the production of generics, right? In order to make sure that the most people have the vaccine. That was just about to happen, and there was a systematic way that this was going to happen when none other than Bill Gates stepped in. Right. There's this organization that he helped set up at the last minute called COVAX. Right. And you'll hear it all over the news. And that's basically the one that's supposed to be handling the global stuff. The principle behind COVAX is that you have to protect intellectual property rights of pharmaceutical makers. Right. And then use this COVAX thing as an intermediary that protects those patent rights. Right, protects the intellectual property rights, and then we'll decide where the vaccine goes. Right, I'm being very, very reductive in terms of how it works here. But that would be responsible for negotiating prices with different places and so on. It was Bill Gates that intervened in that, and it was a remarkable story in terms of what she tells in there. So I really want to encourage people to go check out Ann Newman's article in the Baffler. It's called "Who Owns Vaccines." Check out her interview on the Majority Report this week, because it's really important. The long-term effects of this are enormous. I mean, not only when India is facing a shortage of freaking oxygen. So this reporter that was on for Democracy Now! This week that I kind of mentioned in the intro, she accounts a situation where there were 22 people in this one hospital that she was there reporting on, who kind of went into the ICU, right, with COVID, right? And they all died at the same, basically the same time. And they didn't have to die. But the reason that they died is the hospital did not have access to oxygen. Right? That is just disturbing beyond all belief. And let's remember that India's population is four times that of the United States. So if you're talking about, you know, 330 plus thousand cases in one day, right, that still pales by comparison when you're talking about kind of like, you know, cases per million, right, if you kind of eat it all out like that. But the flip side of that is even more disturbing. If that outbreak in India becomes proportional to the outbreak in the United States, you're talking about four times the number of cases per day and four times the number of deaths, most likely higher in terms of the death toll, precisely because they're facing oxygen or, you know, like oxygen sources in key hospitals in major cities. In addition to that, the sheer number of people that are contracting the virus, and you're seeing that, again, it's all these new strains, right? The strain that came out from the UK, we're seeing some of the strains that come out from the South Africa, and some ones that may be specific to India. Those are now in the pool of kind of the mutation machine of the vaccine, which means if we don't get this under control, right, and to have a global kind of like effort to stop this shit and get Bill Gates out of the way and freaking start producing this stuff generically, then what's going to happen is that we're going to be living with the kind of, you know, living the mask life for a much longer time. So do check that out. Don't turn away from what's happening in India, right? Don't feel too confident and too comfortable in terms of what's the vaccine. I feel thrilled that I got my second vaccine, and I'm very thrilled, but I'm also well aware that, this is just... this is one step forward, but we are nowhere kind of away from the end of this, and it could get worse. So like more movement forward on this. So the other thing I want to talk about on the global scale, which seems to be really significant before we get to the Priorities USA stuff to kind of close out the segment, is, you know, I don't know if you could find a better Earth Day news than what came out of this, this summit that Biden held yesterday. Where you're talking about the Biden administration making a commitment to cut U.S. carbon emissions in half by 2030. That's astounding. And if you get into the particulars of what that actually looks like in terms of what kind of transformation it's going to be, he's claiming basically that even if he's not going to get the support of the Senate, it's not going to go through, that his administration is going to take proactive steps toward that reduction of carbon emissions. And that is things like using the federal government's purchasing power. Right. You know, the conversion of all, say, for example, like postal vehicles, right, to electric vehicles, right? Things like that, that are under the control of the administration, they can make those moves. But those kind of moves are going to be woefully insufficient. So the difference is, and I think Chris Hayes had a really good piece, a really good kind of take on this week, is that what makes this different than, say, some other previous administrations. He went through like going through Al Gore first saying it back in the 80s, you know, now to, Al Gore saying it like 2 weeks ago, whatever. What makes this different, according to Hayes, and I think he's right about this, is that the time frame, right? Is that most of us say, well, by 2050, and where most people hear 2050, they think that's way off in the future. But by the end of the decade, and the fact that we're kind of in 2021 right now, and that most of the steps that will have to be taken will be taken during Biden's first term, if we're able to hit those goals, that means, you know, all efforts forward. And that's why I think that, you know, folks from the Sunrise Movement are rightfully to point out that, like, this is still insufficient in order to stave off the worst of the climate change effects. But I've also know that this is all the more reason to kind of double down and push, right? Because we actually have an opportunity here to make a significant impact on how bad climate change is going to be in the future. We remember back several years ago, we had the IPCC come out and basically say, hey, look, we've got 11 years. Well, we're down to about 9 years now, 8 years now. And so this has to be kind of happened kind of really quickly. So anyways, we're going to be following that. We're going to see where this goes from here. But that was that was absolutely huge. And I do think that Biden is right, basically say the stakes are enormous, because they are. Cool. So let's get to the story on the Priorities USA, because this is I don't want to say
the fun and wonky stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead, man.
So, Priorities USA is a super PAC that supported Hillary Clinton in 2016. They've done really extensive online advertising in the past couple terms in 2020 and 2018. I was actually able to get a training to how to do social media training through them with like targeted ad spending on Facebook. Really awesome, extensive programs to like learn how to do things on the back end of Facebook. So Priorities, they put out a report a few weeks ago or last a couple weeks. I was on a press call for this. They put out a report detailing the ad spending that was going on, and they finally released a report last week. So a couple of the key findings is that Republicans have been outspending Democrats in ad spending a year out of the 2020 election up to like 8 or 9 months or 3 months before the election. So 8 to 12 months before the election, like, or around 8 months before the election, from like a year out, Republicans are spending more. And Democrats got a shit ton of money that came in late this year due to Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying, tens of millions of dollars. And then you had candidates like the woman in the challenger to Mitch McConnell and the challenger to up in Maine.
McGrath, right?
Get all this money and boatloads of cash and nothing to do with it, even though they got smoked in their elections because of that. And so you have like this really, it highlights like the mismanagement of money. If you get a lot of late money coming into an election, you can't spend it. It's very hard to spend. So what they did is they took a total aggregate of all the Senate races and all the House races and how like Democrats, you know, matched up the spending. So one of the key findings is that 75% of the money Democrats spent on TV.
This gets me.
Completely missed their target audiences. So if you're living in a like saturated market like Philadelphia, you have all these different congressional races happening and they're competing for airspace on those TV channels. And like that's actually pretty like what you expect. Like, you know what I mean? Some of it spending in the past used to have media markets where Democrats were in the rural areas and that district took up the whole entire media market. But it's not like that anymore. So, you know, for instance, out here in central Pennsylvania, you have Smucker, you have Perry, you have all three Republicans. I think Joyce are in like the same media markets. So, you know, like if you're Eugene DePasquale or you're the House Democrats and you're fighting for this race, only like a third of the people in this area are going to be seeing their TV ads. While they also, so like, TV ads are completely missing the market.
Right.
And this is like one of the things we were talking about. Like we actually do problems with our training. Like how do you reach a congressional market in New Hampshire when it's like in a New England media market and they have no media markets of their own? And really like the answer to that is divert more of that money to social media spending and online spending and stuff like that. Because you're able to target specific zip codes and districts. And I mean, I think we saw some of that this past year. I know I did when tracking all the mailers the Commonwealth Leaders Fund was putting out over the summer. Like Commonwealth Leaders Fund, the group associated with the Commonwealth Foundation, they got $20 million from Jeffrey Yass, the charter school billionaire in the state. They were hitting mailers going after Democrats in the middle of the summer, and people thought that was odd. And a couple Democrats I was talking to in the legislature knew exactly what they were doing. They are priming people to get for their mail-in ballots, to take votes away from Democrats as the mail-in ballots were coming in. And you think about it, like most of this money is being spent at a time when Democrats or people have already voted. Like you're spending all this money weeks before the election at a time when like you've, are like a good chunk of the people you're reaching have already voted. So it's a really interesting report. I will put a link into it. I didn't link it up yet, but it's something that just like it's infuriating, and it just shows you like sort of like the mismanagement, I think, of money spending within the Democratic Party. Even though Democrats outspend Republicans, they're not doing it wisely.
Well, and let's say, look, this is essentially the same argument that AOC made earlier in the year. She might have made this. She made this early in the year and she got a whole bunch of crap for it. Right. By pointing out about kind of social media spending, some of the things that you're pointing out there too as well. If you want to reach people, that's what you got to do. But here, I think that what Priorities USA does not say in this, which I think that also accounts for the reason why we saw that flood of money, is because that's the system of consultants, right? I mean, the Democratic Party relies heavily upon paid consultants to do their work. And those paid consultants get the most bang for their buck in TV markets.
Oh, yeah. And you also, I mean, you look at it. There are two important races here in Pennsylvania. There was no fucking online spending.
Right.
And that was Tresella and Nina Ahmad. And we lost row offices that we traditionally should have won. Like these, like Stacey Garrity and DeFore were not expecting to win these races. They were floored that they won them, these races. And you look at, you go and look at the ad libraries, like Nina Ahmad ran some online advertising on Facebook a week before the May primary. And she did the same thing a week before the November election. And Joe Torsella didn't spend a single dollar or spent very minimal money on online advertising.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, like, you can see how we lost these races here in Pennsylvania. I'm not going to say, like, this is exactly why or, like, this part of
the USA. No, but it's a contributing factor, right?
No, it is definitely a contributing factor. There was no online game with these two row offices. And really just there's been – yeah, it's just –
Well, and I think
there's been no reflections as to why we lost these seats either.
Right. And it also kind of like, I know that the report was primarily looking at kind of like media spending and use of media dollars and things like this too. But if you're thinking about the flood of money that's coming in, is that, you know, also I need to be thinking about, say, what is the winning strategy, right? I mean, one, you could hit, you know, like TV, you know, can't see that. Maybe some big markets and things like this, maybe that kind of works out. But maybe we have to say we need consultants that are also going to basically pouring money into on the ground campaigns.
I think it's also a generational issue within the consulting class. Like, you know, you don't have older consultants getting these, getting trained in, you know, digital spending. You know, I think it's more of your younger activists and consultants, like, you know, people like me and people like in the C4 groups or other organizations, or like younger people like within AOC's realm who are, you know, the millennials that are running these campaigns.
Exactly. So
understand the social media aspect of it. And I think a part of it is like there's a generational gap there. People just think that they'll be able to do this and get by.
Right. And it's also, and this is where it comes right up against the Democratic Party structure too, as well, the generational structure at that point too, because you remember, you know, this, a lot of the progressive consulting groups, right, were kind of locked out Or were tempted to be locked out by Democratic Party leadership, basically saying you support any kind of primary challenger, right? You're no longer going to get these contracts. And a lot of times the people who were supporting the progressive challengers were precisely the people that you're talking about, like millennial run kind of the media thing, who are much more savvy about what's going, how social media works and how to be most effective in that. So you've got a generational issue in terms of this consultant class, like highly paid kind of well-off consultant class that are paired up with the Democratic Party leadership.
I think people are getting a 10% kickback. Well,
that's exactly it. It's like, and you know, when I say when these consulting companies get the most bang for their buck in these media markets and TV, I don't mean bang for the buck for the candidates. I mean bang for the buck for the consulting companies, right? So, yeah. Anyways, do check out that report. Sean sent me that report, and I was like, oh my god, this is it. But you know, it's actually, I think it's also a very valuable report because it comes out from Priorities USA, right? It's not coming out from, you know, the left-wing think tank that's trying to make a case. But, I mean, these are people that are positioned, like, right in the center of the Democratic Party.
And Priorities is doing good work, in my opinion, with, like, this stuff.
Yeah. So, good. So, last thing to kind of close out the segment, got my D.C. statehood hat on today, right? Thank you, thank you. Was so excited to see the D.C. statehood get a vote and for it to pass in the House. When I lived in D.C., I campaigned for the statehood. I campaigned for local candidates who were running on the statehood party. And it was I have my license plate, taxation without representation. This is a long time coming. And again, we'll see what happens in the Senate, right? I get this. I'm just thrilled that actually was actually put to the floor and put to a vote, and it's actually being used as a leverage. And then you've got some kind of really significant voices coming out and in support of it and putting pressure behind this bill, which is pretty amazing. So, and if you could, you know, figure out, like, once again, that, you know, more people live in Washington, D.C. that live in some kind of Western states that are dominated by Republicans, you got to see why this is an important thing.
What Mondaire Jones said on the House floor yesterday. Look it up. Pretty much like just destroying the racist talking points coming from Republicans. So do look for that.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you for sticking with us for here. And we're going to be back just in a few minutes, or just in a minute, probably less than a minute, to talk a little bit about the insanity that broke loose in Pennsylvania this week. But you know what? That's kind of like saying it's another week in Pennsylvania. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney.
Another day that ends in Y.
Another day that ends with Y. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you can help support this broadcast. You can help expand this podcast and all the work that we do by becoming a member, becoming a patron, by going to patreon.com/RCPress today. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back right after this.
Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day 1,800 auto workers sat down at the Ford Motor Plant in Richmond, California. It was the largest Ford plant on the West Coast. The UAW organizing drive at Ford had just begun a few weeks earlier with a sit-down strike in Kansas City. Company manager Clarence Bullwinkle reported he had returned from lunch only to find the plant occupied and all the power shut off. Workers began their occupation after 12 workers with seniority rights had been transferred from the assembly plant to the loading department and then discharged. Strikers voted to allow company officials and office workers to leave the plant but not return. Bullwinkle was told to get out and stay out until you meet our demands. He refused to budge and holed up in his office. Demands included recognition of the union, seniority rights, and regular pay instead of discharge for workers who are out sick or injured on duty. As the night shift arrived and then left, they passed their lunch buckets in solidarity to the striking workers. Within 12 hours, the strike was reportedly called off after Ford officials agreed to meet with strikers. Seeing this as tantamount to winning union recognition, workers paraded through the streets in the early hours of Saturday morning. But they hit the picket lines later that day when Ford officials failed to appear. By Monday, they were right back on the job. Fearing another day's loss of production, Ford officials met with union leaders. While workers did not win formal recognition, they did win seniority rights and recognition of the Shop Stewards Committee in a first step toward union recognition, which would come 4 years later. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Yes, everybody, welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Ragey Chicken, here once again with vaccinated shit poster Sean Kitchen. And it is a day that ends in Y in Pennsylvania. Sean is clean shaven after quite a week. Sean, what you got for us, man?
You know, I will say one thing before we get started. It's actually funny. This is the only like profession you can get shit for shaving. Eric gives me shit all the time. For shaving when I'm on my calls, you know, and I at least I got a couple fans out there to support it. But yeah, I guess where should we start? Seth Grove again. You're gonna be hearing his name a lot over the next few months on this podcast.
So by the way, if anybody has got some good Seth Grove sound that they want to float my way, just send it to ragingchickenpress@gmail.com, ragingchickenpress@gmail.com. Let me know. I would love any sound clips that you want to send me of Seth Grove. I'm building a cache. So anyways, go ahead.
So the House Republicans released their election integrity findings this week.
Can we just do the air quote thing yeah. when we say findings?
Yeah, findings.
Okay, let's please.
Yeah.
Let's keep this real.
Included pretty much like 0-0 bipartisan initiatives that, you know, people spent months talking about at these hearings. You know, following these hearings for the past few months, there were a lot of county commissioners, there were a lot of out-of-state officials that did come in and that did lift up their voting systems in the state that they live in. You know, even on the Senate side, you had a couple of people from Colorado explain how they have like 30 or 40 drop boxes across the city of Denver or the county of Denver. And how like people in those states, they've reduced lines because of like they've expanded voting access to pretty much make it easy to vote for everyone in the state. That's not what this report is doing. That's not what this report found. This report, you know, Republicans are eyeing up voter IDs for in-person voting from mail-in ballots. Seth Grove has put his name on bills going after mail-in ballots, repealing Act 77. Limiting drop boxes to one per county. They did not say it explicitly, but when you hear the words uniformity that are used, when they talk about uniformity in across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, what they're talking about is uniformity in the counties.
Right.
So if, you know, Mifflin County has one drop box, then Philadelphia has one drop box.
Right.
So that's when they're talking about like limiting drop boxes to one.
Right. So
county.
It's not like uniformity in terms of drop boxes per people. It's drop boxes just because we have a county, there's lines on a map and then one drop box that gets in.
Yeah. So, you know, like that's pretty much like what they're eyeing up. They want third party witness signatures. They want signature tests, come up with a ballot curing system and purging of the voter rolls. So pretty much like this is what their findings are. It's a preview of what's to come. You know, if you looked, paid attention to the hearings, especially over the last couple of weeks, the last three hearings, you had, you know, people from the Heritage Foundation, groups associated with the Heritage Foundation, groups associated with other right-wing organizations come in and talk about what they should be doing. And it's pretty much like lifting all these up. If you look at like there was an article in The Guardian back in October leading up to the election talking about how Chris Kobach, J. Christian Adams, who is from the Public Interest Legal Foundation, and that guy Spakovsky, who Malcolm told off in a hearing.
Unfortunately.
like these are the people who were big promoters of Trump's big lie in 2020 leading up into the election and are the people who helped Trump craft his conspiracy theories in attacking our election. And now we have these people going around the state houses across the country to solidify Trump's big lie in voter suppression tactics.
Right. But look, I mean, as you know, as Shanna has pointed out here, you do have to be fair to Seth Grove, though. I mean, you know, there was voter fraud, right? I mean, you got it. I mean, come on. We got to be honest with people. There was voter fraud.
Yes. Like three cases out of 7 million.
Right. And they were Republicans.
Right? Yeah. So, I mean, like this.
Yeah. So here you go. Like, and he, and like, as you point out, like he actually admitted that, right? He had to admit that.
So before we get to that.
Sorry.
So I put a blog together this week. It's going to be coming out next week, highlighting all the people, putting together some of the insane quotes that came out. I sat, like, you know, spent my weekend last weekend going through hours of election hearing testimony, outlining and hearing the bullshit that was said. You know, like you had a couple people, like there's this organization called the Solutions Opportunity Project that said that compared Pennsylvania's rulings in the month leading up to the election as the NFL issuing a rule change in November, an hour before a game starts, that allows teams to get 5 tries for a first down instead of 4. Like this is what like they're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
In front of a committee hearing. You have people using quotes like Zuckerberg was privatizing Pennsylvania's election process through the money that they were giving out. Zuckerberg gave a lot of money to a nonprofit, and then counties were able to apply for grants. And it wasn't like selectively picking which counties. Any county could have applied for these grants. And it just so happened that the counties that were ran by competent Democrats, like Delaware County, now this is the importance of like these local elections we were telling you about, like, you know, Delaware County, for instance, switching last year, or these counties in the Southeast switching, you have Democrats running them now. They applied for grants that helped them to run for the election, help their election run smoothly. They called them Zuckerbucks, and they were coming up with lies saying, like, Mark Zuckerberg put his thumb on the scales and was and influenced the outcome of Pennsylvania and Georgia. Like, this is like the bullshit that was being said at these committee hearings.
It's incredible.
So Zuckerberg is going to be made into the new George Soros. Pretty much like, and you know, we know how the right wing loves using George Soros in anti-Semitic tropes. So, you know, this is what's happening. And this is what we're coming up with. So questions?
Questions. I mean, this is crazy. Well, I do have to say we have a really important update that we should give right now. To say that Seth Grove earned something this week. Seth Grove, it turns out, has advanced in the bracket to the exclusive awful 8 in the Sisters of the Night Caucus bracket. That's really, I think it's really important because, I mean, I think we can see.
Who's he going up against? That's the real question.
Dude, we're in Pennsylvania, man. He's going up some tough competition. Are you kidding me? But I do think that, you know, Seth Grove putting in the extra effort this week with these hearings and kind of like, you know, these made up findings and be able to double down on trying to rip the democracy away from kind of from Pennsylvanians. I think that, you know, earned him a spot in that position.
And then speaking of Seth Grove, continuing about Seth Grove.
Continuing about, like, because we ain't done. Oh, by the way, Brian Latour just kind of hopped in our chat. Just wanted to know that if he could get a hand, one of those yard signs. So just wanted to just let you know. So
So that's his like long lost brother is Brian Latour's long lost brother is David Latour.
So, yeah.
They're not related.
No, I'm just saying. I'm having fun.
So it was actually pretty funny. I was hanging out with on the deck a couple weeks ago and talking to Malagari, and I was like, you know, I was like, Steve, ask Brian how his brother Dave is doing. And Malagari just looked at me like I had 3 heads on my shoulder, not knowing what I was talking about. So I explained the joke, which doesn't make it fun after that. So
No, So before you get this, the stuff on Seth, on Stephen Caruso too as well. I do want to point out that Christopher kind of jumped in the chat too. We were talking about these drop boxes, for example. He just kind of put out some numbers there. Here's just for an example. So Berks County had only allowed 2 drop boxes for 421,000 people last year, right? And York County had 500,000 people, only had 1 drop box, right? So that's showing kind of like where, you know, the effects.
So and speaking about drop boxes here. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's like, and that's, you see, there are already these, you know, these right-wing nut jobs are already doing it in counties that were going to limit their, you know, potentially their own constituents access to this stuff. But, you know, the effect of this is going to be that much more pronounced when you start talking about Lehigh County, Northampton County, when you start talking about Philadelphia County and Montgomery County and so on.
So here in Dauphin County last year, they had 2 drop boxes set up, one in like northern Dauphin County, which was unsupervised, no surveillance cameras, and where all the white people went to for their drop boxes up there. And they had one in Harrisburg, and you had to go inside the county courthouse. You had to go through metal detectors, through security. And that was seen as like a voter suppression tactic, you know, because that's where all the black and brown people live at in the state. And, you know, like enough people were raising so much hell over it that they forced them to put the drop box outside in front of the county building where people could just walk up and put their drop box in. So yeah, now we've seen that same bullshit here in Dauphin County, where like the people who the good people, the white people were able to have no barrier from them. While like if you live in the city or you know you had to go through a cop, you know, go through a metal detector and all that stuff. Like there was a barrier for that. So there was all that stuff. So continuing with Seth Grove, Stephen Caruso did a really good interview this week with Grove on how he can be a good faith actor. I was going back and forth with Caruso. There are times I feel like Caruso treats Grove with kid's gloves on at times. This was not one of those interviews. But I'm glad he really did this interview with Grove. Pretty much like questioned him on, you know, Grove signing the letter to overturn the election, leading the organizing in that, his association with the American Legislative Exchange Council, and his dinner with Kris Kobach. And Grove responded, we'll see. And then Caruso followed up with like 3 or 4 follow-up questions, walking him through each and every like point he made in his first question. So props to Caruso on that. He got a lot of good, you know, a lot of people were giving him praise online with that. And it was a really good interview with Grove.
Very cool. Yes, kudos all out to Stephen Caruso. That was great. I do love that response too. It's like, well, can you be the good faith actor? Well, we'll see. We don't know. I mean, what would you be even like if you're trained as a politician? What are your response to that automatically should be like, of course I could be a good faith actor. No, he's just like, oh, we'll see. maybe not.
So, you know, like Zach Roberts came in town this week and is leading into the next event, but he was actually asking some really good questions at the press conference on Thursday. You know, he came up on Wednesday for the audit the vote rally. He's doing a documentary on the Stop the Steal stuff, especially the work he was doing down in Georgia and Atlanta in particular. So he wanted to come up here with this. We've been going back and forth.
So for those of you who don't know, Zach Roberts is a photojournalist, right? He's worked for years with Greg Palast, right? He does a kind of investigative work. He's done absolutely amazing kind of work.
He was the one who took the photo of the person, the younger kid getting his shit kicked out of him at Charlottesville that went like pretty much on every single newspaper across the country the following day. You know, he's a really good photojournalist. He was up here on Wednesday and he was asking questions, but you know, you saw Grove in action with reporters. You know, Mark Scarfarlo from the AP was asking about like, well, what about your members spreading misinformation like, don't, aren't you concerned about misinformation being spread about the results of the election? And he said, well, that's why we had this election integrity process. And, you know, he dodged the question completely. Like, no, your people were lying about the results of the election.
Right.
And you're answering about the process of the election. Like, those are two completely different things. Like, you know, there are journalists out there that are pressing Grove and others on the complete misinformation that was spread. And I think this segues perfectly into the next part because...
Oh, you mean about Chris Douche?
No, about the audit the vote rally.
Oh, of course.
So, yeah, like there was an audit the vote rally that happened on Wednesday morning. Seth or Mastriano was there.
I just love that. Like, yep.
Mastriano was there. He sounds pretty defeated. So I actually think Mastriano is going to peter out. I don't think he's going to.
I was gonna ask you about, like, this was been in my head for the past week or something, like, but I mean, I wasn't thinking about it today before you brought
it
up. This
is the first time I've seen Mastriano speak publicly about the audit to vote stuff. He's still hung up on this election integrity stuff. I actually think he's not going to be the force he was. He's going to be in the governor's race due to the COVID restrictions being lifted, people going back to work, and the shutdown. No, we don't have the lockdowns anymore. Like, I feel
like people are getting paid too, right? I mean, I think that, you know, the fact that there was a $1,400 stimulus check and things like this that is actually coming through. And
I mean, still like 100, 150 people showed up, but these are like diehard QAnon conspiracy theorists, election truthers, insurrectionists. There was one point like Zach Roberts was talking to one person and the guy's like, I didn't make it into the Capitol. And like eight people around him raised their hands like, oh, we made it into the Capitol like on January 6th.
Like, and the cameras in the building are like,
and he's panning. Well, he's doing it. He panned everyone like with their arms up in the air. So, no, I mean, like, but Mastriano spoke for 7 minutes and he was talking about like the infighting and how we can't be devouring ourselves and gave like a really defeatist like speech. And it wasn't your typical Mastriano speech.
Good.
I don't know if it's because he's getting investigated by the FBI or something, but
like, they could put a little damper on your parade. I mean, I would assume so, right?
But I mean, it seems like he his stuff is like petering out.
Good. So, good.
Yeah.
The fewer fascists that are running, the better. I think that's a motto that we can all live by. Right. But at least Mr. Pillow Dude was there, right? Or inspired such a thing, which is good. All right, so why don't we take us in then to God, it's like there's so much amazing stuff going on. So what happened here now with Mr. Douche? I'm trying to do the U with the umlaut, right? Isn't that how he's Douche?
Fuck.
What?
Nothing. So, okay. Man, so many things about this video clip. Did you watch the full video clip?
I just watched part of it. Go ahead.
Okay. So
Sean asked me several times to watch the video clip and I didn't watch the video clip. I did not do my homework. I'm very bad.
He talks about how the Nazis were communists and like anti-capitalist and all that stuff, and like just so like that's just right there just starting as a complete like misunderstanding of that. Like, he said the Nazis were socialists because socialism was in their name,
because national like, socialism was in their name, so therefore they're socialists and they
So this is the premise that he's starting by and then just goes off the fucking rails. You know, it's definitely like, apparently like Pat Brown was trying to stop him, the Republican chair of the Appropriations Committee, like interrupting him, trying to get him not to ask this question.
Good luck, Pat Brown.
But yeah, he basically said, like, you know, he turned the nursing homes into death camps and like,
it's just astonishing, right? I mean, it's astonishing. I mean, it's one thing, like
this motherfucker's in office.
That's what I mean. It's like, you know, the thing is, okay, look,
this stupid motherfucker is in office.
But it also tells you, right? I do think, right, that when it comes to him, right? It does show that this is not just like, okay, he wants to show that he's Trump. I think he believes this shit.
And he's also in office because of the Commonwealth Foundation giving him $500,000 in his primary to beat Scarnati's preferred candidate.
$5,000 goes a long way in Pennsylvania.
$500,000.
That's what I said. $500,000. I meant.
Okay, I think it's $5,000.
No, sorry. No, $500,000 goes a long way. Yep.
Yeah. Like, so
crazy. So I think I'm gonna have to put. This is like the other thing I'm gonna have to pull sound from. This is why I'm really mad that I didn't watch the video, because I think that that would have been some fun sound to play today. So maybe we're gonna.
And also like the secretary, the acting secretary, she really just answered the question in stride about like. Without like trying to stop, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, this did not happen.
Oh God.
So
oh, God.
I mean, that's all I got. So
that's all you got. All right, great.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what else to say about it.
No, other than like crazy, and we should have sound to be able to play for you right now, but I don't have it. So again, I'm a bad person. So that's the way it is. It's been. I'll say this before. It's like it's been one heck of a week. This has been one of my most packed weeks that I've had this semester, and I'll talk a little bit more today's last call. But it's. I'm barely ahead of what happened a minute ago right now. Just wanted to point out too as well. Do check out the link. The link in today's notes. Tara Mirth and Susan. Freich, I hope I got her name right, for the Women's Law Project, really kind of lays out again, wants to put a spotlight on these pieces of legislation, these anti-abortion legislation that's being pushed once again. And they put that, I think, very effectively put this in context of like, you know, we're seeing that there's been a skyrocketing of maternal mortality in the state of Pennsylvania, and that bills like these, right? Let's say this is kind of like a line that Sean and I have walked over the years, right? Is that yes, we could probably say that if any of these gets to Governor Tom Wolf's desk, he will veto them. Right? We could say them. We might even say that some of them might not make them kind of like to a full vote, or might not get all of it. Let's just kind of say all that stuff, right? So the purpose of these bills is. Half of it is to get them passed, right? I think it's pretty clear all these people who are advocating for these bills, the anti-abortion bills, that would be HB 1977, SB 21, and HB 1890, they would all like to see them happen. However, even if they don't happen and Wolf vetoes them, if they ever get to his desk, right, this is meant to create a cultural push, right, and pressure back on different communities, right? It's tend to, when you basically say any doctor who performs an abortion has to get a death certificate for the fetus, and then if they don't, then they're going to have repercussions for that. Basically, you're threatening doctors, you're threatening health providers, right? And it's meant to create that climate, right? And it's meant to kind of carry over, and that's what builds these kind of like, you know, these right wing the climates of fear and pressurized. So they're important to pay attention to, and especially when you're talking about it in a context when actual women, right, are affected by this, and you have an increase in mortality rates, right, in the midst of this pandemic. So do check that out. That, again, it was an op-ed they had out this week. It was in Penn Live, and I believe it was some other places too as well. Another piece that came out this week, I'm not going to go into this a bit because we're going to talk about this on Out to Coop Live on Monday, but the Chronicle of Higher Education now has picked up on the fact that you've got, you know, the former, like, Bill and Melinda Gates higher ed dude has come to Pennsylvania to kind of radically redesign the state system of higher education. And so they have an article, a pretty significant article came out on Wednesday by Lee Gardner. I'll tell you right off the top, it's called A System Leader Sells His Vision for Remaking Public Higher Ed. It's a pretty superficial read. If you've followed anything that's been happening in the state system here, if you've been listening to this show, you're far more informed than this article is going to get you. The point is that Chronicle of Higher Education is like, you know, the go-to reporting paper on what's happening in higher education. The point is precisely to kind of build up his credibility and build up his cultural capital within that space. And so now there's a national spotlight on it. And that's kind of reflected in the way that we kind of see this kind of put out. And it's all the entire article is basically set out as kind of like, well, there's a crisis in higher education because of lack of funding, and what else are you going to do? So he might have to make the hard choices, and he came from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and he's coming to Pennsylvania to swoop in to save the day. And the picture of him is looking kind of concerned and all that kind of stuff. The one thing I'll say, I didn't talk a lot about this last week, but I will say this. This is why I'm having Dr. Jamie Martin, the president of ABSCUF, on the show on Monday. The Board of Governors meeting was last week, and I talked a little bit about this last week, but I was so freaking disgusted about how about Chancellor Greenstein's ability to just lie. Right, for kind of PR tick and stick to his talking points about his claims, even after he spoke after Jamie Martin, president of ABSCUF, came and kind of laid out the results of their survey, basically showing, you know, Chancellor Greenstein has been going around basically saying faculty love this, the combination of the students love having the merger of all these of the universities together. I've met with all them and I hear nothing but good things. And then ABSCUF says, okay, we're actually going to go get the data. You claim to be the data guy, right? So we're going to go get the data. We're going to send out a survey to all of our members at the affected universities for mergers, right? And then we're going to see what we get. And in like 2 days, right, sent out, there was like, I can't remember, it was like 1,500. Let me see if I can pull up the number. Yeah, over, it's like about 1,500 professors were surveyed, right? And nearly all of them came back. Right. And it found out that, OK, well, you know, Greenstein was right. Right. There was faculty support for the mergers. Less than 8%. There was less than 8% support. So technically, he said faculty. So apparently he's talking to only those people. And this is exactly how things have been going. So he's talking to only those people to get those results. He says that this is most transparent, incredibly transparent. Only 7% of the faculty members in that survey said things were transparent. So. Again, tune in on Monday night for Out the Coop Live. We'll be talking to Dr. Jamie Martin, the president of ABSCUF, and we're going to get into some of this stuff. We're going to be talking about what is actually facing the state system of higher education, what is happening, is going to happen to potentially happen to students, what's going to happen to sports teams at this university, right? And what's the real agenda that's going on? So that'll be Out the Coop Live Monday, April 26th at 7 p.m. I hope you tune in for that too as well. So, Sean, you got anything else in the realm of PA?
Sorry, I was having a snack.
I was snacking. I'm sorry.
Nothing else. Pretty much, there's going to be important ballot questions on the primary ballot coming up. So vote no on question one and question two, which are to radically change the way states – the way the state goes through that emergency declaration process and basically politicizes the whole entire process.
Great. That'll be on the ballot when?
In the primary.
In the primary.
Yeah, the change of state constitution.
That's the 18th, isn't that correct?
Yes.
May 18th, the primary, vote no on question number one and number two.
Yeah, pretty much like it's the way change the way the emergency orders are done in this state. The Republicans are doing this as a way to attack Governor Wolf getting around the legislature, and what it will do is pretty much like politicize emergency responses in this state. We talked about it before, but pretty much like it'll force the legislature to have to come in and like reissue an emergency order every 21 days to do this, every 3 weeks, which is, you know, if something's happening in Philadelphia and you have a Republican-controlled legislature, they may not feel the need to do that. So politicize like emergency response and stuff like that.
There you go. You heard it here. Vote no on question number one. Vote no on question number two. Great. All right. There's a lot more we could talk about, but we're not going to talk about it because we're running kind of a little long as it is now. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Want to remind you, you can help support the show by going to patreon.com/RC Press and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney,
editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Raging Chicken's Altitude Podcast. It's our last call. We talk beer news, we talk space news, and you kind of see what else is going on kind of in the lives and happenings of Sean and Kevin. So great space news this week. I have been glued to watching every possible video I can see of the Mars helicopter Ingenuity this week. I was like thrilled. If you remember last week's show, they had to call off. There was a software glitch that had a problem with the flight control. This week has been amazing. The videos that came back, basically taken from Perseverance rover, looking at the test, the helicopter took off on Mars, right? Hovered like the first one hovered for about 10 feet above the air, about 30 seconds, and slowly kind of came back down. It's like first time that we've had powered flight on another planet, right? I mean, it's really, that's the kind of stuff that just baffles my mind. And then they had a great press conference about this. Of course, I watched the press conference like the geek that I am. And then they had a second trial that went on Thursday. And basically what they're saying is that they're starting slow, right? And they're going to push this thing to basically see how much is possible, right? So they had a second run on Thursday, and that one kind of came up about 16 feet off the air. And they tilted the rotors at like a 5-degree angle. So basically, you know, they tilted so that it could move one wind direction or another. And so they moved it over about 7 feet and then kind of brought it back down to the Earth again, to the Mars surface once again, which was pretty incredible. And what I have to say, one of my favorite things about this, and I've been watching this stuff with my daughter in large part, she and I kind of like bond a bit over space stuff. And, you know, she's 9 at this point. And let me just pull this up for a second. I'm just... I'm just trying to come up with her name. I'm sorry. Oh, I feel so bad. Hopefully I'll be able to kind of come up with this. But anyways, one of the leads on the helicopter is a woman, and she is like I believe if I've got this correct, sorry, she's a Bangladeshi immigrant, and she's ahead of the team. And her enthusiasm is just freaking amazing, and I'm really kicking myself that I don't have her name readily right here. I will have to do my penance for this, which is her name's Mimi something, and I can't remember her last name. Anyways, but it was just great to see. So that's just kind of like a huge feat, seeing this little kind of helicopter take off another planet. Number one, the fact that the test happened. Number two, that we're actually able to have video from it to actually watch it, like, you know, obviously with the delay and everything. It's just spectacular. And then in other freaking crazy news, which I didn't even know that this was part of the Perseverance rover, while the Perseverance rover is sitting there, you know, watching Ingenuity helicopter, like for the first kind of couple of weeks that has the time to do these tests before it goes on its own mission, while it's sitting there, it's got this little box on it. It's called MOXIE, right? And the instrument is basically, it converts CO2 into breathable oxygen. Right, so it takes it out of the Martian air, pulls CO2 out of the Martian air, and then basically produces oxygen. right? Does have carbon monoxide is the kind of off gas for it, right? So, you know, got a car engine there, right? But just incredible, right? So you have this little box. They did one quick test, and they were able to produce 5 ounces of oxygen, which is about a 10-minute air supply of a breathable oxygen, which is just remarkable. So I don't even know that was part of it. I just thought I'd throw that one in there too. Pretty amazing. That has all sorts of kind of long-term effects. Like, number one, not just for oxygen supply, if they eventually do have some kind of base on Mars for scientific research or whatever it might be. But also, again, this is what they're really concerned about, I think, or certain people are really concerned about. If you can pull out oxygen out of the air, right, or actually could produce oxygen on the ground, liquid oxygen is one of the major propellants in rocket fuel. Right, so that you have the potential to actually base fuel. However, in other news, the U.S. military basically chose Blue Origin, Lockheed Martin, and General Atomics because they are going to be testing out nuclear propulsion for spacecraft in kind of Earth orbit and then beyond. So the idea about needing to produce oxygen, enough oxygen to be able to make rocket fuel, might become moot if they kind of get these off and running. There's a series of companies that are actually kind of involved with that. I forget what they're called, like micro nuclear propulsion and stuff. It's just pretty wild what's going on. The other news is that SpaceX did beat out Blue Origin and defense contractor Dynetics. SpaceX will now be the, they got the contract to produce the lander for the Artemis mission to bring people back to the moon. And that's just, you know, again, huge. You can see what's happening here. So this, the other thing I always want to go by and highlight some of these things too, is because if you look at some of the players here, you're talking about Blue Origin, which is Jeff Bezos' thing, right? So you got a billionaire-led company. You got SpaceX, Elon Musk, billionaire dude, right? You've got Lockheed Martin, one of the largest defense contractors like on the planet. Same is true for Dynetics. They're a little bit smaller than Lockheed Martin. They're on General Atomics. Go ahead, sorry.
Isn't Dynetics a Scientology thing?
I keep on saying it's Dynetics, right? But okay. Scientology is Dianetics, right? So I keep on mispronouncing it because that's what I think of when I see it every time. Hey, looking to bring Scientology to Mars. Right? So the red
just
planet
another grift.
Right. Exactly. But so, I mean, so why does that matter? Right. It's like, you know, again, just to remind you, like, why, I mean, part of it, yes, I'm a space geek. I love this stuff, but my contention is always that this is galactic capitalism, right? This is like the attempt about expanding extractivism and, like, runaway capitalism into, you know, beyond Earth's orbit. And a lot of these folks that are involved in this see this as, you know, a means for kind of crazy riches. If you remember not too long ago on the show, we talked about there was this asteroid that there was a probe that was sent out there. It was a Japanese probe that went to this asteroid, took a sample from the asteroid just to kind of see if it could be done, right? And then kind of analyzed it and kind of brought it back, and they looked at it. And the asteroid was composed primarily of nickel, right? And iron, I believe, right? And it was worth like hundreds of trillions of dollars, right? And what I didn't realize before this is, but if you look at battery production, I've been following also David Roberts has got this great podcast called Volts, which is really focused on say climate related stuff, environmental stuff. And sometimes it gets really, really in the weeds. He's had like battery week last week when he was looking at say battery technology. And what I didn't realize is that one of the primary elements, right, one of the primary materials that you use in some of the more advanced batteries is nickel. Right. So if you imagine you have kind of like what these people look at is kind of like, you know, an endless supply of nickel from these potential asteroids. I mean, how long do you actually think it's going to take until these people start experimenting with it, to actually trying to retrieve asteroids in order to mine this stuff? So I really do think that's where it's going. Why does that matter? Is that that has a potential to concentrate wealth in ways that we have yet to see. I mean, as unbelievable as it is now, you could only imagine what, like, bringing one rock, right, to the moon or something like this that would be produced like trillions of dollars worth of wealth, what that would do to the people who control those resources. And, you know, this used to be the stuff in science fiction, and now this is becoming, you know, there in fact. As we're finding out, there are attempts, again, this was happened in the last, under the Trump administration, NASA, the Artemis Accords kind of came out, which was a way that subtly began to undermine the space treaty, which basically put safe, you know, basically so you can't own planetary, you know, or kind of galactic objects and things like this. This is the direction we're going to go. And I keep on threatening to do a podcast specifically about the space stuff. And I'll get there, especially because I'm going to start. I'm putting together a course right now to offer at Kutztown University on space rhetoric. So that's going to be looking at some of this stuff and the policy and things. So anyways, that's a long segue that I didn't plan on talking about. So I apologize. I'll close out the space stuff this week by saying I did get up early this morning, right? I was up at 5:30 this morning so that I could get there and watch the SpaceX Crew-2 Dragon capsule launch from the Kennedy Space Center on the Falcon 9 rocket, right? That's going, it'll take about a little over 23 hours to arrive at the International Space Station. International crew, a Russian, a Japanese astronaut, and two U.S. astronauts, one woman, one man, and the woman is the pilot of the Crew-2 capsule. So that's really good. So I couldn't justify getting my daughter out of bed for it. So I'll just have to show her the replay when she gets home from school. So anyways, so I'll give some beer news before we get into kind of regular news. So I threatened this last week. I came across this company called, Human Robot, and I'll show you their hat. Here you go. Just going to take this up. I'm going to switch hats right here. I'll put on my Human Robot hat for this, so I can wear this when I'm
right, good, like Duck Dynasty vibe to it.
Yeah. Well, I thought the pairing of the two was like they have this cool logo that I wish they actually had a hat with just that, but they didn't. So I got this. So I thought, okay, every time I'm going up the mountains, I'll wear like the pairing of the Human Robot with the camo. So we do fear. But I did get some of the beer, and it's just kind of, you know, it's actually took me out of my comfort zone when I'm over here. So I'm going to show you. This is the Bergenstrasse. This is right here. This beer right here is a Franconian style Zwickel beer, right? And I had one yesterday, right? It was absolutely delicious, right? It's definitely in the kind of German tradition. I also got one of these called Hallertau Pils, right? A nice German Pils, right? We're going to check that one out. I haven't had that one yet. And finally, get back to a little bit more on the Irish end of things. We got the Twilight Campfighter, which is an Imperial Stout. So I'm going to check that out now. Shout out to the folks at Human Robot Beer. I'll kind of report back even more kind of next week. I do strongly recommend, if you're looking for kind of more like a German style beer that you might be kind of more used to having around, on kind of festivals and things like this, right? That you definitely check this out. But I definitely like it. Definitely looking for something new there. Having said that, got the Free Will Brewing news for you here. They have got a new lager coming out this week, right? I mean, Free Will has not exactly produced tons of lagers, but they got a new one coming out here. It's called the Yuzu Keiru, K-A-E-R-U, Yuzu Keiru. It is a pale lager with yuzu and hibiscus. It's brewed with a simple base of Pilsner malt and rice, fermented with yuzu juice, and then cold conditioned with hibiscus flowers for several weeks. That one comes in at about nice, kind of drinkable 4.4 ABV. I'm definitely going to be looking for some lower ABV beers that are gonna over for the summer. So this has kind of been in that there. That will be available starting tomorrow, right, at both Percussy and Peddler's Village tap rooms. They also have their Pawpaw Saison, right? Now, anybody watched the old Jungle Book with the pawpaw, right, may or may not know that the pawpaw is actually a native Pennsylvanian fruit, right, and tree. So that's one of the reasons why Free Will produced the sour that's based on this. So this is a barrel-aged saison with pawpaws, mixed culture saison, fermented and aged single wine barrel, locally gathered pawpaws, notes of white grape, pineapple, plantain, and followed by woody, earthy stuff. Comes in at 7.4 ABV. Definitely going to check that out. And I just want to give another shout-out. I talked about this last week, but this one is definitely worth it. It's called the Prickly Pear Margarita Mash, a sour ale with prickly pear, key lime, orange, agave, and milk sugar. Comes in at 7.5 ABV. So there's my reports. I'm going to try to kind of, you know, as things begin to kind of make a little more accessible, to try to bring in some different beers so that you get some more than just what's in my town in Free Will, but we'll kind of see what else we've got. So anyways, that's what I kind of got going on this week. Sean, what do you got going on, man?
Not a whole lot. Just waiting for my computer monitor to come in tomorrow.
I have to say, we've gone an entire podcast without a glitch, and your video is pristine. I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm really loving this MacBook. You know, I feel like it's going to take some time to get around and jumping around from it, but I'm getting my computer monitor in tomorrow. Got book stand, got a wireless mouse and keyboard for it, so it's like, it's going to feel good not having my desk cluttered with wires, which is going to be nice. I got my second shot on Monday, so look forward to that Monday afternoon. And then what else? Not a whole lot, just waiting for the warm weather to get here.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had to cover my plants this week, which was an absolute, I was so mad. But I mean, like, I knew it. I planted stuff way too, you know, my wife and I planted stuff way too early, but we went out to the garden center, we're just like, just screw it. We're so freaking tired. We want to like get something, get out and dig in the dirt and plant some stuff. So that's what we did. Covered up everything. I took everything off today again, because we had two nights in a row of freeze warning, and everything survived, which is great. So we shall see. My big thing this week, I mean, we're heading out to the end of the semester now. So like my, you know, grading and just like, plowing through the last part of the week has just been nuts with its meetings and everything like this. And, you know, at my kid's school, my daughter was hybrid, right? So she was like home 2 days and in school 2 days, and they did Zoom one day, and she really loved that. And they just took away the hybrid option. And we think primarily because of the, you know, standardized testing stuff coming up. But I did. I had an opportunity to talk to the principal and saying that, you know, actually there was a lot of students. I mean, again, we're between my wife and I, particularly me, right? I mean, I'm working from home. I'm teaching from home, so we've got a flexible schedule, and that is not the situation for most people, right? So I know that we had a certain kind of like ideal scenario for a hybrid, to making sure that we were kind of safe and balancing that, but that wasn't true for a lot of other students. So she's back, and she is. She's had a really difficult time. And you know, it's when you start seeing some of the impacts of the pandemic has had on kids, just kind of what's going through their mind that they don't talk about on a normal basis, like just kind of feeling unsafe and things like this, and routine being changed with like a month and a half of there. So that's been really tough. So that's,
I think it's pretty stupid that the school's reopened.
I agree.
Like this late in the season.
I agree. I do think it's like, because of testing. I think it's because of the testing.
But yeah. And then we got some big news coming out Monday. I don't want to give too much, but keep an eye out for what's going to be happening on Monday. Looking forward to this for a while. I know you and I have been talking about this.
Yep, but yep.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting.
Oh shit. That's not good.
and Kevin just
I just spilled that. Thank God that was water.
I thought it was your coffee cup.
No, it was water. But and I do have this. So I just hope I didn't ruin my phone. That's how I'm gonna end the podcast today. See, there's my phone. I'm drying it off, doing nothing like that.
But we got some cool stuff coming up. Looking forward to it. We've been planning this out for a bit. So keep an eye out, and then
you got to look at that. That will be available on Sean's Twitter feed, his Facebook account, his lifestyle channel. Everything.
I'm also making I'm going to be making a chicken caprese salad.
Ooh, nice!
After this, with pasta,
nice.
like a one pot pasta with shells. I got everything earlier.
Just out of curious, how do you spell that? Because I'm learning from you about how to spell Italian things. So. Oh, good, man.
Well, and then one of the things I thought was really cool. Last thing is the photos I took of that press conference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those were awesome.
Yeah. I was not expecting the reaction I got from that. Like, obviously, I was shitposting with the one saying, you know, notice anything unusual about this photo, you know, with those like trying to cancel voting rights.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, male, pale, and stale. We're like also talking about their lack of fashion choices coming from the Republicans looking to cancel voting rights in Pennsylvania.
Well, there was, I do have to say, on that score, there was a a serious kind of frump factor going on with the dress code there too as well. So that was a legitimate kind of
I love how like half of them were wearing fucking sneakers.
It's just classic.
Yeah.
It's just classic. Sorry to be kind of doing this. But yeah, I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, it's a perfect picture, right? I mean, what more do you need to know? A bunch of kind of like older white dudes, right?
Pasty white guys, no sense of fashion style. Right. And then they're going after your voting rights.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So that's future Pennsylvania right there for you. So anyways, hey, anything else for the good of the order?
No, that's pretty much it.
Me too. Well, I'm going to close this out, and hopefully I got most of the water that I spilled over thing. I didn't decide. Like, thank God it almost went like right all over my mixer, and that would have been not good. I got it away from that. It was good. Anyways, boy, that's pretty much par for the course in terms of like the way my week has been going. But good to see you as always, Sean, and I'm so glad you got the computer. It looks like fantastic. I know you've been waiting for a long time. I know this afternoon I'm going to be probably opening, I might go with the Twilight Camp Fighter Imperial Stout from Robot, Human Robot Brewery. So we'll check that out. So, all right, man, for the good of the order, take it easy. Thank you all for tuning in today. Great discussion today. I love the kind of comments coming in on YouTube today. It was absolutely, it was great to see. It always, it's always great to know that you got folks that are out there kind of in conversation and throwing in some great stuff. So thank you all for tuning in. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back. Remember, on Monday, we got Dr. Jamie Martin, president of Abscuff, and Out to Coop Live. It's on 7 p.m. And then Sean and I will be back next week with, I'm sure, an update on the crazy in Pennsylvania and everything that's going on. See ya!